to jump right into all my silly questions.
Sure.
And you know what? I just discovered Allison. Well, let me just introduce Allison Arngrim, who played Nellie Olson from the Little House on the Prairie series, among a million other things that you've done. You know, after going down in, for the past couple of weeks and looking at your career, although I can understand why it's easy to get pigeonholed into Little House on the Prairie and really be known for that, being so young and it being such a big role, you've done so much other stuff. It's, you know, it's really maddening.
I know! That's what I always say. It's not like I did Nellie Olson and then just went home and sat there.
I've
done like a bazillion things, but people, I always remember Bela Lugosi, the man who gave us Dracula, most identified. Bela Lugosi's was in many, many films, had a great career, but they buried him in the Cape. He was always known as Dracula. And 100 years ago when Robin Williams first got famous and we're all hanging out at the Comedy Store, I said, never forget, they buried Bela Lugosi in the Cape. Nanu, nanu. And that's the thing, is you do get remembered. And we've always joked since I was a kid, my fellow jokes about that, you know, eventually, no matter what I do, it'll be best remembered as.
Yeah, and it's like, but then I'll read something about you, and it's like, and she did this in French. And it's like, what? It's like, there's so many additional layers.
Here I'm an ex-child star in France. I'm, you know, Madonna. I'm Lady Gaga in France.
That's awesome.
It's like Allison, you can tell how old I am. I compared you to Jerry Lewis in France back in the day. So you can, I dated myself terribly, but you know what I'm talking about.
I told you how David Hasselhoff goes to France, to Germany.
Yeah.
I'm basically the Hoff of France. It's like that.
There you go.
Like Hasselhoff in Germany. That's me in France. Okay, first of all, Little House in the Prairie in France, what happened is they started getting the reruns kind of early because they got the pilot and they really liked it. So they said, we have to have the show. So it was still just mid to late 70s and they were all getting the reruns. You know, often the foreign reruns don't start till way, way later.
Sure.
So they were running it there and they got hooked. Now remember, France only had, like a lot of countries for many years, 3 TV channels. Now they have, you know, a million channels and cable and everything like we do, but they had like 3 channels for a really long time. And traditionally in France, people go home for lunch. They used to in the old days, everybody went home for lunch. Kids traditionally, unless they live really far from the school, would walk home, go home, eat lunch, come back.
Mm-hmm.
They still do. Now still a lot of people will go to the break room in their office and watch TV and eat there, and the kids will eat in the cafeteria. But a lot of people, if they're anywhere near the office, will go home for lunch. And when they do, they watch Little House in the Prairie. And in the break room, like we might have the soap operas on, they have Little House in the Prairie. It's on at noon. And Little House has been on at noon every day in France for almost 40 years.
Wow. Do you walk down the street and it's like, that's Nellie.
Right. So when you've got the whole country and they've only got the 3 channels, so to say, and the entire country stops what it's doing at noon and gets lunch and goes, oh, look, Little House, La Petite Maison. They were all, the whole generation just grew up literally glued to the set watching La Petite Maison every day at lunch. And La Petite Maison dans la Prairie, and of course, who do they like? Well, they're French. They like Nellie Olson.
Yeah, of course.
Or as I always say, they don't think she's mean. They think she's French.
Yeah.
And so they were like waiting for me to come. So when I first went there in 2002, I think they were like practically sitting around waiting at the airport for me to show up. They'd been like, when is Nellie Olson coming here? Because we love her. And it was just, it was cuckoo. It was cuckoo. I went on a talk show and they were singing the theme song. And as you know, the theme song, The Little House, does not actually have words.
That's awesome.
We're sitting there going, la, 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 la. So they're hooked. Hooked, 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 hooked. So I started going there all the time, and I have a show there, and it's a thing.
Let me ask you, are they interested in the, I guess, the culture of 1870? Not really, right? I mean, they're not.
No, they are. That's what the French are so weird, okay?
Yes.
And I adore the French, but this weird things people do not know about the French. The French, at some point, got weirdly fascinated with America in the 1800s, the whole Western thing. They like Westerns. A lot of French people got into Westerns years ago.
I have no idea. Wow.
They love cowboys and Indians. They have Western festivals in France. You know how we have Civil War reenactors, and they have those things, and everybody gets dressed up? They have Western reenactments. There will be these events in France, out in the country, and they will take over a field for the weekend, and all these French people will show up and make camp, and some of them will do, like, Civil War. Some of them are cowboys, and they're all in cowboy gear and have a little fort, and then a bunch of them are dressed as Native Americans. They've got it all down. They know if they're Sioux or Apache, and they have the whole teepee set up, and they're all running around speaking French. Because remember, the Indians... A lot of the Native Americans spoke French in the 1800s. Because remember the French settlers and Hudson's Bay, Canada, So they've seen the Westerns and the historical thing of how the French traded with the Indians in Canada. And if you remember, even in the early days of Laura Ingalls and the whole Little House on the Prairie when they're in Kansas, the Indians spoke French.
Yes,
so
they did.
They clung to this with both, and they went, the Indians, the guys, look, it's French. And they somehow got way into this at some point. And they love Westerns, and they like country music. They have country music festivals. I even appeared at the gigantic Morand Country Music Festival, which is like thousands of people. They're cuckoo for Johnny Cash, who, of course, then was on Little House. So,
which is great, because it makes sense. I mean, everybody seems to really go towards Johnny Cash anyway. Like, you don't have to like country music to like Johnny Cash.
Everybody loves Johnny Cash.
Yeah, everyone.
Johnny Cash is in Man in Black. But the French, they somehow got into this country thing. They have Western reenactments. They like Westerns. They like country anything. They like country music. And they adore Little House on the Prairie. It's the wackiest thing imaginable. And the French do come. I mean, some French people, they do fly out. They went. So a lot of French people were at the Walnut Grove reunion in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, when you meet the French, they want to, all they talk about, they want to come to America. And they want to see New York, Las Vegas, L.A., the Grand Canyon. French people are obsessed with Las Vegas and the Grand Canyon. They all want to go to San Francisco for some reason. A lot of shows took place there. They're also obsessed with Hitchcock, so they all want to go to Bodega Bay, the place where the Birds was shot.
Right.
Because they're all Hitchcock freaks. And they all want to go to Walnut Grove. They want to go to Minnesota and Walnut Grove, or they want to go to Simi Valley where it was shot.
That, I mean, I just think that's really awesome that that really blew up and that's all going on right now. Are there...
And Argentina. Like all of Argentina is glued to the set watching their Little House in the Prairie.
Is there a whole, like, merchandise thing going on that we're unaware of? Like, you know, Nelly dolls and Willy dolls and the Mercantile Legos?
Sort of, kind of. Is merchandising for the show has always been terrible. There should have been so much more. There's that Ashton, was it Drake, Fufu China dolls. I have my Nelly doll right here.
I have mine. Yes, I do, too. I do, too.
They made some beautiful dolls. They did the Ingalls, and then they did Harriet and, like, Nelly and Willie and, like, no Nels, which is a terrible, terrible injustice.
Where the hell's Nels?
There's no Richard Bull doll. I'm very upset. I would totally buy one. So I have, like, the Nelly dolls. Those were those. There's a bunch of stuff that's, because you have Harper... You have the Laura Ingalls Wilder Estate. You have HarperCollins, the publishers. You have NBC Universal. You have the Trip Friendly, the whole Friendly Family Productions, the State of Michael Landis. Like, how many bazillion people own the rights to this stuff? So what you have is some stuff that's merchandise based on the books. And absolutely, if you go to DeSmet, South Dakota, or Independence, Kansas, or Walnut Grove, the big one, or any of these places that have a museum, the nice one, Missouri, really redid theirs out at Rocky Ridge, where Lauren O'Malley lives.
It's beautiful.
They got a ton of stuff. They got, you know, the books, and they have the cloth dolls, the Ashton Drake dolls, and they have all the little pails and the bonnets. Now, Trip Friendly and his whole empire, they've started doing stuff. They have a Little House on the Prairie official.com page, and they have some prairie merchandise. They were doing some toys, and they're doing stuff. But there's a real market there, and that's why, I mean, I have, because I have that lovely painting that Howie Green did, that's all artwork of Nelly. So I have T-shirts. And,
oh,
of course,
great.
That's why the books have done so well. That's why all the books any cast member does do well, because people are dying to buy something.
Yeah,
there's
like,
not enough stuff.
You know, like, I have a 9-year-old son who I pretty much have forced Little House on, and it somehow worked. It's enough where he knows who everyone is. And, of course, he'll gravitate towards you because he's like, you're the only one with balls in the entire show. So,
thank you. Totally.
And that's his word.
As some people post on the internet, only realistic person on the show.
And, you know, he's really into like Legos and Minecraft, and it does pop up a little bit. And I know somebody was pitching a Little House on the Prairie Lego set.
Yes. They were trying to do it because Lego had a thing where if you had an idea and you made a thing out of Legos and said, this needs to be a Lego thing, and they would like vote. They didn't, I don't know if they got enough people.
They did.
Or they said, okay, we like it. We'll put it on the back burner and we'll see about it. We'll get back to you.
Right.
But we do not currently have a Little House Lego set. I'm bummed.
Fingers crossed.
So doing
a little stuff, I came across something I've never heard of that you did called Here's Amy, like a comedy album. And
oh, dearie me. The 70s were a weird time.
It was comedy album
for
central.
Everyone.
Yeah. I thought Here's Amy was really funny, actually.
You actually sat and listened to the thing. It is pretty funny.
It's weird.
I mean, some of it's totally dated, but some of it's still funny.
Well, I think you should do a follow-up called, like, maybe Here's Tiffany or something.
No! what happened was, and you remember that, okay, so the 70s, a peculiar time in life, let alone stand-up comedy, which was, I was doing stand-up, and I was really young. I was like 15 and running around 1977 doing stand-up comedy.
Unbelievable, 15.
Yeah.
And
hitting the clubs, and there was Chevy Chase smoking a cigar in the parking lot, and Robin Williams, and Jay Leno, and David Letterman, and Jay Leno wasn't famous yet, and like, it was just banana boats. It was just so crazy. So I was hanging out with all these people, and I was doing all these different kooky things in my act. It was very experimental because you're 15, you're doing stand-up. All bets are off. You can pretty much do anything.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it's wild. It's the Wild West, you know?
It was the Wild West, and it was the Wild West for comedy, and anything went. And I was working with this really great group of people. They had a comedy group called the Village Idiots. They were hilarious. Did you ever see a show called Don Kirshner's Rock Concerts? Probably.
Yes, oh, yes. Of course, yeah.
Yep. They were the comedy group, the in-house sketch group for Don Kirshner's Rock Concert, all the comedy sketches. That's the Village Idiots.
Oh, okay.
And they occasionally had the woman who worked in the front office as a guest character in their sketches. Her name was Cassandra, and she grew up to be Elvira.
Crazy.
Yes.
Elvira used to work at Don Kirshner's, and when they needed Bikini Girl, and Robin and Jan in the Village said, I don't want to wear the bikini this week. Get somebody else to wear the bikini this week. Hey, Cassandra, can you come wear the bikini this week? You know, Robin sick of being Bikini Girl all the time. And so it was Cassandra Peterson who became Elvira. So the Village Idiots included Peter Jurasik, who's very famous and who was on Babylon 5 and many, many movies. Great guy. Mark Ganzel, who later was one of the producers on the TV show Coach and was in a bunch of series, but he got very big in television production. Robin Hunt, who is in Connecticut, I think, making cupcakes. But Jan Fisher, Robin was gorgeous. She was always the bikini girl. She was hot. Jan Fisher went on to write the movie The Lost Boys.
Oh, really? It's a favorite.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
So that's who was writing my act when I was 15. Peter Jurasik, the author of The Lost Boys, the producer, Coach, was like, hello. Okay. So these people were really smart. And we were sitting around going, what can we do? And they said, well, okay, my mother, who was Norma Macmillan, who's a famous voiceover artist at Cartoon.
Casper.
She did the first Family album.
Wow.
When Von Meter was JFK. And my
album.
Mom was Caroline and John John.
I have that album, Allison.
Everybody has
that.
Oh, my God, it was
in
the Guinness Book of World Records.
Absolutely.
Everyone has.
Yes.
I don't. I'll get it, though. It'll be added to my vinyl collection.
Now, you have the album. Do you have the second album?
Do I?
Ooh.
Oh, no.
I'd have to hunt in my parents' record collection. I wonder if they do have the second. I remember the first very, very well. But
the
I don't remember if they have the second.
And it had that iconic picture where they took Von Meter and the other actors out to a park and took a picture and then primitive photoshopped in the White House behind them.
Right.
And my mom is what looks like a young girl standing there with a balloon and a little bonnet thing. And everyone's like, oh, she's what, like 17 or something and doing the voices of Caroline and John John. She was 40.
Wow.
And married with two kids and like, right, yeah, I'm standing there with a balloon. So it was like hilarious. But she was really good at doing kids' voices. So she did this. They did a second album. And the first one was huge, literally Guinness Book of World Records, fastest selling album, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Huge. They released a second one. Unfortunately, it came out days, maybe a week before the assassination.
Oh, man.
and everyone had just run out to get it. It had more songs. They did more singing on it. It was musical comedy. And everyone had just gone to get it. And then, of course, JFK was dead, and everything went to hell in a handcart. And mm-hmm. that was it. So anyone who has the second album, that is a huge collector's item.
Oh, yeah, I imagine. I'm going to have to look in my parents' cabinet and check that out. They may have it.
I have to look. I've expanded
my collection. Everyone has the first one. It's amazing. Everyone I tell, they go, wait, I have that album. My parents have that album. Everybody bought at least one copy.
Oh, my dad would just roar. I mean, he would just play it over and over and over again. Loved it.
But by today's standards, it's very tame. It's very mild. It was considered shocking in its day because they were actually mocking a seated president. And that was like, oh, can you do that? And now we listen to it like, oh, they're being so nice to everybody. This is not really like mean comedy at all. It's so soft. But it is a hoot. It is a when Jackie is showing the way to, and yes, yes. In this room, what is it? So
that
silly.
That was my dad's favorite. That with that little whispery voice, and the teeny one is over here. Oh, it was great.
I have a friend who's like way too young to listen to this. He can do the entire album and all the parts.
Really?
He like recites the Jackie stuff. He's obsessed with it. So yeah, it was huge. So my mom, and she did all these cartoons. So we said, well, wait a minute. Maybe we do something like Amy Carter. We have a little girl, a tiny little girl, a little blonde girl. And I might have a little blonde girl in here as a little blonde girl doing the show. We do something about Amy. So we just snuck in just a teeny thing at the end where I'd like, you know, put on the glasses and like, good night, daddy. And people were like,
is
crazy. Wait, you kind of look like Amy Carter with the glasses. So we wrote a thing. You know, Amy saying her prayer, dear God, God bless mom and daddy, and don't send Uncle Selena to jail, and you know, help poor brother Billy get off the beer. And it was just really silly. And people went mad for this. And we said, okay, wait. If mom was Caroline Kennedy on the First Family,
yes.
Do we do a comedy album where you're Amy? Oh, my God.
Nobody else could have pulled this off. There's no one that could have pulled this
Nobody.
Off. I mean, you're doing something. I mean, I'm not going to say it's aggressive, really. But, you know, it's definitely poking a bit of fun, but it's not that bad. And
it was tame. It was tame. Yeah. We were a little more scandalous than the First Family album because it was 1977, 78. But then again, it's still like pretty tame, really.
Yeah, the Polanski thing was really funny.
Okay, we did have a Polanski joke because that was like the thing everyone was talking about at the time. So there's some creepy stuff. But like, you know, it's Gerald Ford falling down a flight of stairs and Richard Nixon taping everything. And it's all those kind of goofy. There's a guy, Greg Suttis. we discovered in the clubs, who did the greatest Jimmy Carter impersonation ever, and several other people, and so he's Jimmy, and it's so sad, he's since passed away, and we've lost Mark, and we've lost Dan. I got out the album recently and realized that, like, there's only, like, two or three people still alive who are on this album. Peter's still alive, Robin's still alive, obviously I am still alive, Dave Drozen, the producer, is still alive, handful of people are still alive from this album, really, like, tragic thing. But we did this thing, we said, okay, how, you know, they wrote a schedule, we're like, is this too much? No, it's goofy, it's fine. And we did it, and one of the things we did, and if you listen to it, even though there are weird sketches, like invoking Roman Polanski and all kinds of, like, bizarre stuff, you'll notice that Amy is never really made fun of. Amy is never wrong or bad.
Right,
Amy Carter is still, yes, it's all the terrible adults making fools out of themselves. And Amy is always completely innocent. And her innocence remains, and she is still this perfectly lovely little smart innocent girl. And I mean, the worst thing is it's like we have a sketch where her uncle tries to get her an agent. She can't sing. That's it. Amy is eternally innocent and doing the right thing, and completely smarter than these yo-yos around her. And the adults are all crashing into each other and being horrible and just depressing and embarrassing. But Amy is never mocked in any terrible way. So.
Well, we have Amy on the line.
But we taped it. We recorded it in an afternoon. We all piled into the studio and did it. And then that night, we just played it live, invited everyone we knew over to sit on the floor and eat pizza and drink beer and listen to it and laugh. And that was the laugh track.
That's crazy.
Wow.
And
there
was
no
follow-up.
Half the performers laughing at themselves. Hmm?
And there was no follow-up to that. Like, you never went and said, like, well, I'm going to start releasing comedy albums. But
no.
But you have a stand-up
career. In the 70s, again, no internet.
Yeah.
Three networks, handful of talk shows. If you were selling something in the 70s, you went on Mike Douglas, you had Dinah Shore,
right.
Merv. I eventually did get a Merv. But that's it. There was a handful of places that you would talk about something like this. And if there had been an internet in the 70s, this thing would have gone platinum. because it would have gone out on, it would have been a thing on Twitter and Facebook, and people would have been, I order one. But you had to go to a store, you had to buy it on vinyl. I think we released it on 8-track.
It's a hidden gem. It really is. It's a really, really good piece. And
so, yeah, it didn't sell that well because nobody... Also, if you remember in the 70s, it was really crazy time. People did movies or they did TV. They did not do both, and stand-ups did stand-up. And people went into stand-up and later got a comedy show. But people who were on a series didn't go out and do stand-up and sing. That was a thing that started happening like in the 80s and 90s, you know, Bob Saget and all that. In the 70s, people just didn't get it. I mean, like Hal Linden from Bernie Miller sang. Most people didn't know that he was a fully trained opera singer.
Right.
And because in the 70s, you did one thing. And if you were on Little House in the Prairie, people had great difficulty grasping that you might actually be in other shows or, heaven forbid, do stand-up comedy. So nowadays, nobody would have batted an eye. They'd go, oh, the girl from Little House in the Prairie doing an Amy Carter thing. It would have been like on Twitter and, you know.
No, it was a weird show in my house because, you know, I'm Jewish. So my mother would always say, aren't they Christian? You know, cause, and then, no, they're just normal people. And then all of a sudden, Jesus will be brought up. Which is only maybe the first season or something.
Right. And then, like, the whole freaking cast is Jewish. So
Right. That's right. I
so
learned that.
They're having all these... because Laura, in real life, Laura Ingalls Wilder and her family, they were Lutherans or something, Methodists, I forget. But they were out of the prayer. And whereas Michael Landon was Jewish, Melissa Gilbert was Jewish, Catherine McGregor, Mrs. Olsen, was a devotee of the Vedanta ashram in Hollywood and did pilgrimages to India.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew it was something like that. I knew it was something like that. Mark and I just did the podcast for Here Come the Brides, one of my favorite episodes.
Yes!
And I was, we had so much fun. But I was talking about that. I think I said Hindu on the podcast. I couldn't remember, but I just knew that she was very spiritual. And
Swami Vivekananda. There's a guy named Vivekananda who wrote a bunch of books. He's a very clever guy. And there's a guy, Chetananda, who actually got to meet, who did translation. I have actually Vivekananda's book translated by Chetananda and signed, autographed by him, and met in St. Louis and all this stuff. Oh, yeah, she's into this whole Vivekananda thing, and it was, yeah.
You know,
yeah, pretty good stuff.
We were going to do, we did a type of survey to ask the people who listen to this podcast whether they wanted an Albert Palooza or a Nelly Palooza. And so we had people vote, you know. You know,
right.
And, we had a lot of people. It became a pretty controversial thing. And people were really getting nasty. And I was getting, like, messaged. And it's like, well, you know, Nelly's been on since the beginning, so I don't think it's appropriate. And it's like, calm down. It's like,
these are hardcore fan favorites. But
yes.
You will get controversial because if you've ever gone to the Remembering the Real, all caps, Real, Laura Ingalls Wilder page on Facebook, people who are heavily into the books and the history get really distraught over the characters
right.
that were made up for the show.
Yes,
Albert's out of the butt. Is that real?
Mary never got married.
Mary gets married to a hot guy and have a baby. No, yes. Then
right.
they get distressed.
But yeah, you won by a landfall. I mean, you know, it was a slaughter. You know?
Matthew Labrador.
He won't return my calls and
oh man, well I'll tell him that I did it and it was fun and he should call you because he's a good interview. He's a really funny guy. He's a really funny guy.
Yeah, if
you get him on, he's hilarious.
He's somebody I followed since I was a kid because he was on a computer show called Whiz Kids and I was a computer nerd.
Yes, he was on Whiz Kids. He was amazing.
Yeah. This is what I wanted to ask you. I'm sorry. So the album made me think. Whether and seek out if there's an audiobook for Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, which people have a hard time
funny.
Saying. Is there an audiobook?
There, okay, so when I did the book in 2010, that was like Kindle was just crossing over. I think it was one of the first books to sell more Kindle than hardcover. So the Kindle explosion, the Kindle revolution was happening in 2009 exploded. So I did that. Audiobooks, every celebrity doing the audio version of their book was not happening quite yet like it is now, the audiobooks. But now, nobody wouldn't even put pen to paper without having the audio thing in place. And like Charlotte Stewart, who is Miss Beadle.
Her book, I love her book.
She immediately, her audiobook was being recorded like before she was like, the ink was dry. So she did her audiobook. Everyone's doing audiobook now. So now it's going, well, where's the audiobook? Why wasn't there an audiobook? I'm like, in 2010, they were like, eh, who does an audiobook? So I've gone back to my agent, gone, hello, audiobook, because, like, I'm getting phone calls and emails, like, daily.
Take my money.
He has now gotten on the phone with people, and contracts and whatnot are currently being drawn up. And predicting that I may be able to get an audiobook out, hopefully in the next couple of months.
That's awesome.
Oh, that'd be great.
So we're working on audiobook is in planning and progress.
Nobody could tell this story but you. Like, I wouldn't want to hear anybody else reading it. It's like, all right, great, okay. Yeah. I know how to read. You know, I don't need, you know, to be read to, but I would want to hear you doing it. That's all.
Yes.
Right. Because when I wrote the book, it was that whole thing of like, make it feel like I'm talking to you. Mm-hmm. And I think I succeeded. People say, I read the book. I hear your voice in my head.
It's like, put down the phone.
So it's almost an audiobook already. People are so I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, basically this isn't even a read. This is a performance, but I could perform the book. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would be a lot of fun to listen to. I really do.
I got on the phone with the agent and go, we took it, just whatever you got to do, we got to make this happen because people want it. So,
and I do have a cast question, which you probably get asked all the time. So just tell me to go to hell if you don't want to answer it. With Jonathan Gilbert, like, is he?
Yeah.
I know he's just a private person, but how private is he? I mean, is he somebody who doesn't look fondly on his role or?
He really didn't want to be in the show. It's true. He is our Where's Waldo, has like fallen off the face of the earth, is totally like, neener, 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 you can't
cool.
find me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he's doing his own thing. So, you know, guys, people got to do what they do. Because he was a really little kid. And what happened is, so Melissa gets the part of Laura, right? And so her mom and her, and like, yeah, he's with them at the audition because like they weren't going to leave him in the car. And then they're like, well, who are you? Oh, I'm Jonathan. Oh my God, he's adorable. Wait, he could be Willie, which that's just like, he'll be hanging around anyway. He's too young to go to school. He's going to be coming with her. Okay, you're boom. And so he was just hired because he had a great look and he was there. So he was, as I said in my book, he was the absolute definition of just along for the ride, folks.
Wow.
He really has a wonderful natural talent, though. One of my favorite performances of his is probably one of the last episodes that he did, the May I Have This Dance episode. And he was, I just adored him in that. I just, his
he
acting,
was
he
genius.
Was always Willy, always in the outhouse, always eating
always,
something.
He would ad lib things and they would keep it, he would do stuff and suddenly come on idea and he would ad lib. And they would just be saying, cut, print, and the continuity, Mary, or the script would say, wait, stop. That's not in the script. It's not in the script. And Michael would go, wait, what? It's not in the script. What's not in the script? The thing he just said, it's not. And he'd have to look and go, my God, it's not in the script. Did you just make that up? Yes. It's in. Write it down. And he would do these and get away. He was a genius.
Yeah,
and I
just
don't think
clicked.
He really understood it. And he was so good, but he... We would go to parties, and Melissa and I would be off to some red carpet thing, an NBC affiliate this, and blah, 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 that. He'd be back at the house playing pinball.
He had no interest.
He didn't care.
Totally unaffected. Totally didn't care.
And we'd be all dressed up. We'd be picking her up. We'd be going somewhere together. We'd go, aren't you coming? He's like, no. He's like, I don't care. And he did, no publicity. He just, completely didn't care. And as soon as he was done, he, packed his things, went, see ya, and, moved out of the house. And he's had multiple careers. A lot of people think he's in New York. I don't think he's there now. He was there. He was in New York, and he did do a thing with day trading and stocks, but that was a while back, and he apparently made a significant amount of money, allowing him to disappear from the earth. He has been to Africa. He has been to South America. He has been all over the world. I did write to him when my book came out, and he did answer me. But he has always been different. He has always been kind of above it and out of it and not in our loop. Yeah. He was never into the idea of showbiz, publicity, interviews, anything. So when people go, is he coming to reunion? It's like, he didn't go to personal appearances and events, and he was on the show.
Right.
He's not coming anything now.
I can respect
what's funny
that,
to me. What's funny to me is all the pictures on the internet that claim this is what Jonathan Gilbert looks like now, and they're all like completely different men. And it's just like my girlfriend just sent me one the other day, and I was
and
like,
you can look at the nose
we don't know what
and go,
he looks
yeah,
like.
That's not him. Well, first of all, because exactly. we know that he'd be incredibly handsome because we saw him in season 9, how good looking
yes.
he's become
oh,
as
yes.
a young man.
Yes, he.
So
had
we
been.
Know that even at
it was always
49,
the chin for me. It was always his chin for me. He had kind of a little
chin.
Bit of a lantern chin. I always look at his chin
yep.
to see that's not him. His chin's
and those
too round.
Big eyes, those huge eyes. So somewhere there's a guy who, if I'm 55, blah, 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 so he's 49, 50, a
right.
stunningly good-looking man
exactly.
out there who is on. And yeah, if they find him, we'll know the picture because we'll go, oh my God, because he's really good. The guys they've been finding and saying this is Jonathan aren't good-looking enough.
Right, I agree.
Right,
I agree.
Because we know the boy is stunning. That's all. So there you go. Yeah, I don't know. It's disappointing. I know. I'm sorry. Everyone goes, where is
I
he?
Don't
can
think
you tell
so.
Us where he is? Can you tell us what he's doing? Can you get him to come to a reunion? It's like, no.
But you know what?
Not going to happen.
It seems like Matthew Labrador is a little bit like that as well. Like he just wants to kind of do his mm-hmm. own thing. And that's totally fine. I think it's great.
And Matt will do reunions on a whim. I mean, he did do the 40th anniversary on the Today Show, and he did all the interviews and the night. That was great. We were so glad to see him. But he'll do crazy stuff. Like, he didn't come to Walnut Grove, and he didn't come to this, and he didn't come to that.
Right.
He didn't come to all these things. And then he did the Sonora one of the first ones we did, up in California. And that had to do, I think, because it was Michael Lannan's Cancer Fund and a whole charity thing. But we did a thing in Beatrice, Nebraska. And it really was in the middle of nowhere. It was the Homestead National Monument. So it was a historical thing. And it was very cool. And it was several of us got there. I'm telling you, they picked us up at the airport. And we pull up to the place. And we get out of the bus. And there's Matt standing there in the parking lot.
Just hanging out waiting.
What are you doing here? And he's laughing and going, I don't know. I've never been to Nebraska. It sounded fun.
Wow.
And on a whim, he went, yeah, okay, I'll do this. And just didn't tell us and just showed up.
That's awesome.
And, of course, he was a huge hit. We all went out and had a wonderful time. And, you know, as much as you can do the town in Beatrice, Nebraska.
Right.
And so, he's like, he won't go to everything. But every now and then, he'll say, well, that sounds like a kick. that was like the thing in New York. He could have said no, and he didn't. He said, well, I'm in town. It's down the street. Don't even send a car. I'll just take a cab. I'll be right over.
I was surprised at how much exposure that appearance got, actually.
Right?
You know, out of nowhere, everyone's like, you know, the cast of Little House was on, you know, the Today Show.
Like, surprise! Yeah, the networks don't realize how big it is. You know, every time they've done anything on us, it's always like a few minutes long. And as everyone said, you could have had them on for the entire hour with no other guests.
Oh, easily.
Everyone would have stayed tuned.
Easily. When I watched it, I was like, wait, that's it? And that question that I thought was so interesting, because it did kind of make me think when they were asking the inevitable, do you ever think there'll be a reunion? And I thought, wow, it's like Michael, Victor, Dabs, Kevin, I mean, all
right.
of the Merlin, they're all, you know, they're all passed. It's like, what would Little House look like with, it would be the women, Little Women on
it'll
the
be
prairie.
A, and it'd be me and Melissa and a handful of people because, well, also we kind of, if you watch a show, we're going 100 years to the day. Because remember in 1976, when we were having the bicentennial,
yes,
right.
we had an episode called Centennial.
The Centennial,
and it was
yes.
1876. So we were trying to say, okay, it's 100 years to the day. It's 1870s. Ba-boom. And that made total sense, which means so it would be 1917. It would,
which would
be the
awesome,
20th century.
Actually, I mean,
right.
it would be such a wonderful period of for Little House to exist in. I don't think you can make
and
a show
go,
like this today.
You'd have what were Laura and Nellie doing in 1917, kind of thing. Yeah, it would be trippy.
Right.
I mean, I'd do it. So me, but it's obviously, like I said, all the rights, because like I know that Frizz a Trip Friendly is still trying to make it a feature film. And the idea is that he gets the feature film made, then it's like, fine, yeah, sure, TV, whatever. But he and a team of people are absolutely convinced they're going to make this feature film. Now, they've been trying for a while, and it has not come off, I'm sorry to say. And he's had some really great writers and directors involved with it. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to pull this off. He swears that this is going to happen, but I couldn't begin to tell you.
You know, and with so many, I guess, I'm not going to say mediocre, but mediocre reboots of things, that I feel as though if they did approach Little House with a reboot, that not only would it be acceptable, because you're rebooting everything anyway, but if you were to be able to pull it off and make it look correct, you know, like, you know, it's you can do this the right way, or you can just kind of skimp a little bit and ruin the entire thing.
And I think that's probably why the movie hasn't been made, is they're being cautious, because look what's happened. A lot of reboots of things have been parodies, have been mocking the show. As I said, you know, the Brady Bunch movies were all just comedies going, ha, 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 how silly this was. Land of the Lost was just like, you know, the Will Ferrell vehicle,
very
fine,
worthy,
but it's totally not. And they all just, they all went, you know, totally away from the show. What is it? Chips is even kind of a parody thing.
Yes, it is.
And even Roseanne, as beloved as Roseanne, the Roseanne series, and I think everybody's kind of holding their breath with the reboot. I think they're doing a 6-episode reboot of Roseanne, and everybody's already like, wait a minute, Dan is dead.
I can't imagine. Well, at least with the reboot of One Day at a Time, they went totally different. They just went, it's this complete other family with current issues of what a mother would be dealing with now. And just went another way, which makes sense. But I don't know. I don't know. And that's the thing. I think that they want to make the film of Little House, and there certainly are elements that would totally work, and there's people who would pay to see it. But they're like, okay, well, which part of her life? Do we go all the way back and do, like, when they're just leaving Wisconsin for Kansas, do that section when she's a little girl? That means you don't have Nellie Olson or a lot of the characters that people are really attached to.
Right.
Do we make it like the show? Do we make it like the books? Do we go all historical realism and make it deadly serious, or do we make it more lighthearted? Do we stick to it, or, oops, do we let someone go nuts and make a parody of it, and how do we stop them from doing that if we don't? So you can see why it hasn't gotten made yet. They're like, trying to not screw it up.
But the fact that those questions...
If they know if they screw it up, it's kind of like making Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. If they screw this up, the fans will kill them.
They did a good job, and they still wanted to kill them. You know, it's
I mean, that's because I remember when they were doing the Lord of the Rings, they were like, okay, we have to make it in several pieces because we have to include everything because this is a book that not only everybody read, but the people who read it are obsessive. And if you make Lord of the Rings and you, like, leave something out, they'll burn down the theater.
They will.
And have, like, focus groups and things. And I think Little House, it's like that. If they do it right, it will be the biggest blockbuster that's ever. They will be printing money. If they do it wrong, people will riot and tear up the seats in the theater.
Yeah.
I'll be the first
Absolutely.
One.
Right? So, I totally understand that that's, it's like, okay, that's how it is.
About a year ago, I have a client, I design websites and I do graphic design and everything. So I have a client who is friends with Mason Reese. And about a year ago,
my beloved ex-husband,
And
I love that show.
I came across this show that you're on a year ago, so, about a year ago. And at first I couldn't place you because you're in that 50s scene. And it's like June
Cleaver.
You love
that flashback? Is that the nuttiest thing ever?
It's so bizarre. And all right, so basically I'm talking about a web series called Life Interrupted. And you can find it on YouTube, and I think it's really, really a fun show.
It is.
We have our own channel on YouTube. We're Life Interrupted. Go on YouTube, Life Interrupted. Subscribe. Watch the show. There's several episodes. They're adorable. Yes.
And
what happened is I had met Mason in New York, and we had a mutual friend, Stephen Wishnoff, who is a writer and had worked for TV Land and is very good. And so Mason's talking to Stephen one day and says, I think I want to go back on TV, because Mason had been like owning bars and restaurants. He was a restaurateur in New York. He had a gig.
Right.
So he wasn't sitting home. He was, you know, running bars and restaurants, but he wasn't in show business. So he said, I think I want to be on TV again, but I have no idea how that would happen or what it would look like. I don't know what it would be. And Stephen said, well, give me a few days. Let me think of something. And he says, okay, I think I have a crazy idea. It's like, it's kind of you. It's not you. It's an ex-child star, but it's kind of like the really, really messed up version of you. Like,
yeah.
Imagine if you were a total disaster area and like sleeping in a room over a bar. And he's like, okay.
But your name is Mason.
Says, and but your name is Mason, and you've been married and divorced, and it's all gone wrong, and your mother-in-law, ex-mother-in-law, is your landlord. And he's like, that sounds horrible. Okay, so it's like me, my life is hell. Yes, okay, great. And so he calls me and goes, how would you like to be Mason Reese's ex-wife? I said, married to Mason? He goes, no, just divorced from me.
Just divorced. You don't actually have to go through the ceremony.
You don't have to be married to me. Just divorced. I was like, this is hilarious. Okay, sure. And then he says, well, you're remarried. I go, great. He goes, but you married a woman. You married Erin Murphy, who was Tabitha on Bewitched.
Right. Bewitched, right.
And I know her. And that's the thing. So everybody in the show already knew each other met or worked together somewhere.
Some of us knew. That's so funny.
We didn't all know. I don't know if Mason knew Erin, but like he might have met Dawn, because Dawn Wells knows everybody. And I had worked with Dawn, and I hadn't worked with Erin, but I knew her from parties and events.
Right.
And I had done a thing called For the Love of May with Mary McDonough from the Waltons, where indeed Michael Learn
was in that. I was just going to ask, how did Michael Learn, how did Mom from the Waltons get in there? Okay.
Well, so weird. So I knew most of these people, or met them or done something with them like 100 years ago. So he says, okay, so you're married to Erin. I'm like, well, she's gorgeous. Who people would be leaving husbands and wives for her? Okay, if I'm going to be married to a woman, I'll take her.
Sure.
So beautiful, tall, blonde woman. So I was like, oh, perfect. Okay, I know her. Great. I can be married to her. It'll be fine.
You guys
We're
make
friends.
A great,
great
couple.
We make an adorable couple. So, and it was her birthday the other day, and I'm like, my beautiful TV wife. So, and Bob loves it. My husband Bob goes, oh, it's, you know, and he sees her. We're married to the same person. So, Mason Reese for Tabitha, Nellie and the French love it. Tabitha and Nellie in gay marriage. So, I'm married to Tabitha. And then he says, okay, I've got it. Dawn Wells is playing your mother. Perfect. I said, I love Dawn Wells. I love Dawn Wells when I was a kid on watching her on Gilligan's Island. I've actually done several events and personal appearances and talk shows and things with Dawn Wells. So I know her. I said, Dawn Wells is great. Perfect. She's my mother. Then we're trying to find Erin's mom. Now we're gradually collecting people. Suddenly Brandon Cruz is going to be in it, and Julie Dolan, they're playing old bandmates of Mason's. And then, of course, Robbie Rist winds
like
up doing
nowhere.
The song.
That's great.
Because Robbie Rist, you know, huge music composer. He does all the music for the Sharknado movies.
Mm-hmm.
So he does the song. Like he wrote that. So he performs that. So he comes up with the music and does a song, Wishing Off wrote the lyrics, and they did this whole thing. They wrote the song. So Robbie Rist is in it, and Robbie Rist, we said, well, what do we name Robbie Rist's character? And Mishnah says, Oliver, of course.
That's hilarious. I mean, I'm a big Brady Bunch fan, too, like most of the universe. But as soon as I learned his name was Oliver, I'm like, it's just incredible.
They're like, oh, he's Mason's friend Oliver. We're like, ah! Okay, we're like, sorry, Robbie, can you play Oliver? Yeah, I'll play Oliver. Okay, so he suddenly becomes Oliver. We're like, this is getting funny. And then we're trying to, like, the search for the mother-in-law, and we're like, okay, since Erin's family is supposed to be more wealthy and her mother-in-law is very grand and imposing and kind of looks down her nose, a little bit Mrs. Olson looks down her nose, it means, who are we going to get? And so searching for a nice older actress who can really bring it and be imperious and regal, that everyone will go, oh, it's her, and bow down. And Harlan, my publicist, said, have you asked Michael Learned? And Steve's like, I'm terrified to ask Michael Learned. No, I haven't asked Michael Learned. And I'm like, well, you know, I did that thing for the Love of May with her, Mary McDonough. Yeah, better. And he sent her the script. And she called him back and said, this is the funniest thing I've read in months. This is hilarious. Yeah, I want to do this. And next thing you know, we have Michael Learned, Mother Walton, sashaying into the bar with her stole and her Chanel.
Love it.
I love
going,
the
oh,
scene.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And like,
love it.
Not wanting to touch anything because it's dirty. And oh, my God, she's amazing in it. She's so amazing.
It's really funny. I think it's Mary. She says, I'm Mary. And it's like, well, of course you are. Something along
yeah.
those lines.
Hey, Mary. Yes, of course you are. Yeah, I can see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I haven't got to see every episode yet. I've only got to see the first couple, but it's just, I love it.
It's a fun show.
I'm going to binge watch.
Binge watch. And they're sure. And that was the thing is we shot this episode, and then it's like, well, wait, now the thing to do is to make everything a mini-sode web series. That's what everyone is doing with everything. So, okay, it's a web series, and people really dig it. And then, well, we found out you can enter contests, film festivals. It will take now web series and digital stuff and pilots and miniseries.
Especially
and web
when
shows.
There's a cast like this. Jeez. I mean,
right? So yeah. Steve, we said, I'm right. going to enter in a couple of these film festivals. And I said, well, that's a great idea. And then we won. And then he entered in another. And then he sat up one night like it entered, I think, every film festival on the universe. We won, like, all of them. If you
know.
Go to the pages, all these little one winner of this best show for this best
it's
show.
Like, winner,
that,
winner,
we won,
winner.
Like, everything we entered.
It's like, that's awesome. And I, from what I understand, it's going further and further, right?
Well, that's what gets crazy, because the Emmys,
yeah,
the freaking Emmys, the Television, you know, Academy of Arts and Sciences.
I've heard of it.
They have, they now have comedy short form as a category, and they absolutely have web series get nominated. So we thought, well, we better do it and send it in. And they said, okay. And I'm a member of the TV Academy, and I pull up the voting page, and we have one more week of voting, which is the four-year consideration people who then wind up on the ballot for nominees for Emmys. So it's the get on the ballot vote. And now when you go to the four-year consideration page, outstanding actress in a short-form comedy drama series, Allison Arngrim.
Congratulations.
That is so awesome.
That is so
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
When you were filming it.
John Wells also, Michael Learned, and the show itself, at Best Comedy, can vote for the series.
You
but
guys have
I am
up. Definitely taking it. That's awesome.
TV Academy people are voting for me right now. I already voted for myself.
I think you guys are really going to find some success with this. I really do. And I think that you...
It's a
looks,
good show! And I mean, talk about a cast, right? We have all these amazing people, and it's a good show.
I hate new sitcoms. I really do. And this reminds me...
There's a lot of crap out there.
It reminds me of the last time that I kind of enjoyed sitcoms a bit. It's a simple story with its complexities and the characters that are fun enough where I don't need to completely understand them, but they remind me enough of other people that I can go, that I can relate a little bit, you know? And I don't know, personally, I felt right away, I thought it was really interesting. And what
well,
about
and
season
when
two?
We snuffed it, he said, this is going to be like an old fashioned sitcom.
Yeah.
You got the couple and you got mom and you got the couple and they got the kid and the thing and the party and the friends. And is he going to have a birthday or isn't he? And it's good old fashioned comedy that people can understand.
You know what it really reminds me of is what Louis C.K. tried to do with HBO about a good 10 years ago, Lucky mm-hmm. Louie. And I just felt that was a little bit more of like in front of a live audience type of thing. But
yeah, right.
But it's a little bit of a throwback to telling a story and not being so ridiculous about the, I mean, I don't want to put down certain TV shows because they're very nicely produced, like Modern Family or something, but it's just a little too much. Like, I don't need so much going on for a simple television show.
It is. And can you tell a story? Can you tell us, do you care about these people?
Right.
Old school, and definitely that's what Wishnoff's like way into. He's like, bring back the real TV, let's do it.
And you have another thing going on where you give tours, which I want to just
you go down the list and go, what do I not have going on? It's kind of terrifying, yes.
So
that's what I was going to say. It'd be a lot easier just to talk about what you're not doing than
seriously.
What you're doing. Let's just talk about that.
So it's
there would be silence.
Not, the Dearly Departed
I'm not
tour, which
swimming
sounds
the English
like...
Channel. That's oh. the only thing. I'm... Yes, we have more dates.
Number one.
The Dearly Departed tour. Dearly Departed Tours is a marvelous company, and they're on Santa Monica Boulevard, across from the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, appropriately enough. And they do kind of the spooky tours where famous people died and things are haunted and whatnot. But in addition to that, they have the Nasty Nellies tour of Hollywood. What happened is I found out I was a closet tour guide. My friend Richard Sebastian, who's a tour guide and does tours, we're hanging out one day, and you know, he's pointing things out. Oh, did you know in blah 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 67 this was this, and did you know so and so lived here? And I go, yes, but did you know that in 1972 blah, blah. And he's like, how do you know this much? Wait, are you like a closet tour guide secretly? So he said, you need a tour.
Yes, I am.
And so we created this tour. And you sign up, and we have, if you go to the Dearly Departed website, you will see that, indeed, we have dates up. And we have, there they are, Nasty on Tour, July 23rd, and August 20th. They're both Sundays at 3 p.m. Sunday at 3 p.m. is generally when we do it. So July 23rd and August 20th. And you sign up, and it's $85, but you get a free autograph picture included.
I don't think it's a bad price.
You take the tour.
It's not bad.
There's tours that cost way more.
Yeah.
So you get in the van. It's just 12 people. It's very exclusive. It's just the 12 people in the air-conditioned van with dark windows and me and Richard. And we go all over Hollywood, and it's very historical. You get all things about what really happened. But you also get the personalized stories. For instance, the Chateau Marmont, big Hollywood landmark. But I live there. When we moved out from New York, we lived in the Chateau Marmont, so I have stories about that. We go to Liberace's house because my father worked for Liberace. He managed Liberace.
I've read that, yeah.
With Seymour Heller. We go by Michael Landon's house. We go by Hollywood High, where I went to school. We go by Paramount, where we shot the show. We go by. So it's a personalized tour of Hollywood with history, but then my history, my life story. It's like a stand-up act and my autobiography in a van with Hollywood history. Oh, and we stop for milkshakes. We go to the farmer's market and get milkshakes and get a free autograph picture, and you can buy my book and stuff.
Can you stop at In-N-Out Burger? Any chance you could stop at In-N-Out Burger?
We don't go to In-N-Out Burger.
It's my favorite.
If In-N-Out Burger puts in a chicken sandwich or a vegetarian sandwich, I will go to In-N-Out Burger.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, then it'll be a packed lunch.
Okay, packed lunch. There you go. But it's really good. But yeah, so I do a tour on top of everything else. Yes. I'm looking, in fact, at my schedule here. So on July 7th, I will be at O'Comic Con it's supposed to be in Omaha, but it's actually in Council Bluffs, Iowa, because that's where the big convention center that everybody in Omaha uses is over the border in Iowa. So I will be at O'Comic Con. And then I will be on July 14th at Laura Ingalls' 150th birthday celebration in DeSmet, South Dakota.
I want to go to that.
And Dean Butler. That's a twofer. For prairie folks, if you're going out there, you want to go to South Dakota July 14th, that whole weekend, the 14th, 16th. It's me and Dean Butler. You get Nellie and Almanzo. You get a twofer.
I was going to say, so are you saying Nellie and Almanzo finally together?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. We ditched Laura. He's finally run off with Nellie. The cinnamon chicken worked, apparently.
I finally got it,
and we're in DeSmet.
It really wasn't that bad.
Had cayenne pepper all over it. Come on.
The cayenne pepper, it did something to him. He finally left Laura for Nellie, and we're in DeSmet. And it's funny because I said, well, it's Laura's birthday, but let's face it, she wouldn't be inviting Nellie if it was actually her party.
Right.
So I don't know why, but they're having me there. All weekend. And then I come back and I do the Nellie tour on the 23rd, and then I do again in August, and then I go to France. And I have two shows in France and actually one in Belgium this year. We're throwing in one in Belgium.
Holy cow.
And then now this weekend, is this going to be out before Saturday?
Yeah, I'm going to put this out, by Friday. Yeah, this will be out by Thursday or Friday.
Great. Because the 24th, Saturday the 24th in LA, Hollywood, Saturday the 24th at 1:30, I'm going to be at this place. It's a beautiful historical building. It's called the Woman's Club of Hollywood. It started in the 1900s, like before 1920, and they founded the Hollywood Library. I mean, it's amazing people. But this fabulous building, we're doing an event there called the Indomitable Spirit. And you probably saw it in my million things I'm doing.
Yes.
This thing I am doing, there's a website now called the Indomitable Spirit. And Carolyn Peterson and I are putting together this roster of people who have survived and overcome amazing things and gone on to lead these wonderful lives. Like, okay, my friend Steve Peters was diagnosed with AIDS, but like in 1983, I mean, he's supposed to be dead.
Right.
He's been sick, and he did almost die a couple of times, but he got better. And the doctors aren't even completely sure what's going on with him, but he is still alive, and he leads a very full life. He has a whole career and a life and is happy and sings the Gay Men's Chorus and travels all over the world. So he's Jody Vaclav, who was supposed to die of a stroke and never walk or speak again and blah, 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 and she didn't. And everybody, all these people who didn't die, and we have a whole roster of people. Some of them are people who were physically ill or told they wouldn't walk again or that they were going to die and said, nah, I don't think so.
That's
and
the
are still alive.
That's incredible. I mean, that.
And,
I
and then people
great.
who overcame severe domestic violence, childhood abuse, what have you, and were told you will have no life, you will be miserable, you will be, you know, suffering from such severe trauma that you will not be able to get a job, get married, have a life, and said, maybe not. and these people who were all told their life was over for some reason and said, well, what if I don't think I'm quite done yet? And somehow pulled themselves up and fought back and are now not only not dead and not in a wheelchair and standing in their chair, but are also like working and living and loving and are happy and having a whole life.
Well,
and
I'm so
kind of saying, how are they doing this?
Right. And I'm so glad that you're bringing this up, Allison, because I swore if I was privileged enough to be able to be a part of this conversation, I would not leave this conversation without telling you personally, you are my hero. And the reason for that doesn't have anything to do with Little House or whatever, but I share a common history with you as far as childhood abuse. And so when I first read your book, it was just like, you know, that's, to me, I mean, I don't mean to bring the room down or anything, but to me, that is the highest calling in a person's life where they can take their personal pain and they can turn it into something. And I feel like, and of course, I didn't know Michael Landon personally, but from all the things that I've read about his childhood, I couldn't help whenever I would watch Little House, you know, or you already know what I'm going to say, and some of those scripts. And I thought, I would always think, that's just a marvelous thing for a human being to do, is to take their pain and heal from it and then use it for the benefit of others. And all of the amazing things that you've done with getting laws changed and passed, and it's, you're my personal hero.
Well, yeah, you
just
went out there and actually changed a lot of things. Like, there's no doubt about it. And I think, you know, you've definitely physically changed and helped a lot of people. That, you know, who knows?
I'm so happy I had the opportunity to do so. And that's the thing, is it's like, you find meaning in your life. If things go wrong, it's like, yes, but how do we find meaning in it? How do we make this work? How can we use this to somehow turn things around for other people and ourselves? And I saw that, for instance, a long time ago at like the International AIDS Conference, when I was volunteering for AIDS Project Los Angeles, they had all these symposiums and lectures and studies they'd done. And one of them was, they actually found that people who were diagnosed with AIDS, if they volunteered, if they did volunteer work or they did activism to make things better for people with HIV AIDS, getting funding for medical programs or volunteering at their AIDS project, their white blood cell count went up. Their T cell count went up. Their viral load went down. It physically caused them to be healthier, their immune system to improve. And they said, so something about taking matters into your own hands, having an effect on the situation, volunteering to help others, is physically good for you. And they thought, well, what is it? And I said, well, what would happen then if people who've been terribly abused as children, who have trauma, who have post-traumatic stress disorder, who have been hurt by this, what if they volunteered? What if they fought back? What if they did things to help make the lives of other abused people better? Would this affect their PTSD? Would this affect their panic attacks and their ability to sleep and make their physical condition better? And I can tell you, yes, it does.
It absolutely, yes, it absolutely. And I'm so fortunate in that, and Mark knows this, I'm a teacher without any credentials. I'm able to use my healing from my abuse. I'm a teacher for women who are homeless and who are in recovery from drug addiction. And you better believe 90% of the women that come in here have all been victims of childhood sexual abuse. That drug is just a numbing agent because they can't deal with the pain. I'm preaching to the choir. I'm preaching to the choir.
But you did. But if you lowered the rates of childhood abuse and childhood sexual abuse in this country, the rates of homelessness, drug addiction, prostitution, and crime would plummet. The majority of people in prison, both men and women, were abused as children, usually sexually abused as children, and this led to things that they're doing to put them in prison. They now are asking people, for instance, the mental health system, I know in New York State, now part of their intake is, and do you have anything involving trauma in your childhood that you'd like to discuss since you're here? Were you abused as a child? They have to put in the questionnaire because they said, we're missing it, that they're coming in. And of course, that's why they're there, why they're on heroin. And we're not asking that, and we're not finding out till they're in the program for months. And even Dr. Drew, when he was doing his show, and that's kind of how the Mackenzie Phillips thing wound up kind of coming around, becoming public, is he started asking people as he was doing the intake, okay, and how long have you been taking drugs, and when did you first start doing drugs, and did you start with alcohol, or blah, 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 whatever, and were you sexually abused as a child? And they all went, Wait, nobody's actually asked me about that. Oh, you mean that? And it was all of them. It's
wow.
Like, well, yes. that's, did you start taking drugs like because of that and to kill the pain for that? Yes.
Absolutely.
So, absolutely. And people don't resist. Trauma is real, and it does have an effect, and it literally, it's not just your emotions. It literally, that level of trauma has an effect on the your brain, on the neural pathways in your brain.
Well, I think people first want to forget.
It's very
difficult
to undo.
You want to run, and you don't want to think about this. You don't want to deal with it. You want to just move on. Mm-mm. And what you should do is deal with it. You know, it's...
Exactly.
I feel so lucky, so privileged that I've been able to do things that have made things better for other people in my position. And so, so when I heard about this whole indomitable spirit idea, I was like, yeah, this is right up my alley. And more people are coming forward. And that's what I would encourage you, in fact, you yourself, the website, indomitablespirit.com, I've been putting it up all over Facebook and Twitter. Go and sign up, because then you'll get on our mailing list. We're going to have online video stuff where various people are going to speak about things on, like, podcasts. And there's also, you get discounts. We have T-shirts and tote bags and candles, and you get discounts. And if you're in the L.A. area, please come on Saturday at 1:30 over on to La Brea. La Brea, the Women's Club. It's on La Brea near Hollywood, right at the corner there.
And I'm going to put the link to it in the show notes, and I'll put it all over our little website and everything.
And so I'll be speaking, and we'll be, and it's going to be fun, and we'll have cookies and coffee, and like I said, it's not going to be a downer, because the reason these people are indomitable are talking is because they're happy and funny. These are people who are funny. Steve Peters is a hoot and a holler and a riot, and so it's going to be like a fun afternoon talking about these horrible things happen, but look, now it. And we'll have a Q&A, and as I said, we have tote bags and T-shirts. I'll have my book. Steve will have his book. It's going to be great.
It sounds awesome. It sounds like a great cause, too.
But yeah, sign up for the website, because we're going to start a whole, it's like a club. We're having a club. You join, and you get emails and buy stuff, and it'll be fun.
I absolutely will.
So, cool. I wanted to just, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, because I've originally asked
for a half
hour.
I'm going to have another one of these, like, in an hour. So, yeah. So
really? So, yeah, I'm going to put this up in just probably a day and a half, even possibly tonight. Whenever I do, I'll reach out to you. And I want to
thank you
much for taking the time to do this. I do have one last question. Weird question. Why was there never, or did you ever happen to see a prototype for one, a Little House on the Prairie Atari game? It makes so much sense. Think of it. Think of all the terrible things that would happen, you know, a plague.
I would be into that. And that would be a perfect thing for my husband, who didn't watch the show. My husband, Bob, never watched the show. And then we got married, like, finally saw, like, six episodes. And finally, and then he met everybody. And then after he met everybody, now he watches the show. Because he goes, well, I know these people, so this is fun.
That's a great idea. Oh, that would have been we could have been hitting Nelly. It would have been great.
He loved all that Space Invaders. So if there had been a Little House Atari game, he would have been completely into this. This is the bridge of the gap between the two communities. But, you know, there you go. Like I said, the 70s was so weird. You were this,
Nelly,
or you were
wheelchair.
That, or you were this, or you were that. And the video game people on Atari, that would, Little House on the Prairie, no, that's the 1800s, no. So they, like, there was no, yeah. And there should be. I would totally be.
Yeah, think of the scenarios. It's like, the farm god
I
hell.
I think there's still, I actually have to look, because I'm not sure if it's still up. I think it is still up. I had a game on my webpage.
Oh, really?
If you go to bonnetheads.com, B-O-N-N-E-T-H-E-A-D-S, bonnetheads.com, the official Alison Arngrim Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, Nelly Olson website.
Yes.
Let me see if he still got the game on here, because he had a whole...
That's
yes.
a great domain.
If you look at the page, and you'll see my pictures, wig, blah, 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 on the left-hand side of the page. Play the game, Don't Mess with Nelly, click here. Now, let me see if it's still working. I'll ask. Oh, yes, it's still working. Oh, my God. Okay, read the instruction. Nelly is mean but doesn't punch very hard, so you have to hit the bad guys many times to knock them out. If you can beat all the bad guys, you get taken to a new page where you have a special Alice and Nelly wallpaper background photo collage that you can download.
That's too much. Holy cow.
And might need Flash plug-in here. Play now.
Yeah, I have to update my Flash.
But yeah, it's a little, I got to update my flash, it's totally not working. But there's these bad guys, and you click, and Nelly punches all these, like, Wild West bad guys.
See, there's your Atari game right
there. Completely awesome.
Throw it on a cartridge.
So we have a game. We have a game that you can play totally free on my website.
That's
how
awesome.
Fun is that? I'm sorry, I'm still thinking of Nelly in the wheelchair with the Atari game. I would just love to have gotten
this. This is great. Sorry. Somewhere, as we're saying this, some nerd is designing this. Someone who actually can physically design something
in
like
French.
An Atari computer game is going, wait, clatter, clatter, clatter on the keyboard trying to figure out how to do this.
I say we put our heads together and do a Kickstarter.
I'm in.
Awesome. But, Allison, I can't thank you enough for coming on and taking this time to speak.
I think
with
we plugged everything. We plugged Comic Con. We plugged the SMET, both the tours, the Le Mal au Trésor de Nelly Olson. It's if you speak French and happen to be in France in September, it's hilarious, and it's audience participation, total audience participation, interactive. Me and Patrick, we come into the audience, and you get to pick things out of a box, and it's like, and people are dragged up
Holy
on stage.
Moly, that sounds
and it's
amazing.
Really insane. Full audience participation insanity for like 2 hours. And then I do a huge autograph thing afterwards. And you can buy my book in French at that show because of course I do.
Oh, so, I know. I came across something you wrote about autographs, which I was just cracking up on Facebook, where if people want autographs, to be honest with you, kind of like, you know, don't just, you know, sell my autograph. Because I went on eBay. I always do this whenever I interview somebody, and it's like, find out what's selling on eBay. And yeah, people are selling your autograph like crazy.
And cheaply too. I feel like I got marked down by Kmart. It's like hard,
right?
I'm like seeing the prices. No, really?
Right.
That's all? Oh man. But yeah, but it's crazy because I wrote instructions because sometimes they'll just like email you and go, "Can I have a picture?" And I'm like, "You just emailed me. What did? Give me a stamp. Something." Okay. So, indeed, if I did how to get an autographed picture, you get the old fashioned self addressed stamped envelope. You get the big envelope and you write your address on it and you get enough postage on there. And then you fold it up and stick it in another thing and you mail it to me and you write a note. Say please, may I have an autographed picture? If you make a donation to protect.org, we love that. That's always fun. And then there are people who they're totally genuine. Can you sign it? It's for my mom. Her name is Mary. I'm like, great. But then I do get these weird ones. Oh, I want your autograph, and I have three brothers, and they need it too.
Mm-hmm.
But miraculously, these three brothers do not have names.
I'll fill
they
in
cannot
them later.
Mention the names. Rebecca, could you sign these other pictures for my three brothers, who for some reason I can't tell you what their names are? What is that? And you need four of the exact same picture. Okay, here's yours. And the three blank ones that I just said. What are we doing with these? So when you're that silly, you send me something that patently obvious that you're selling them. I said, okay, look, times are hard. We all have to make ends meet. I get it. So send me the thing and say, you know, maybe make a dose protect. Say, look, I'm going to be selling these. Give me a couple of bucks. $10. Hoop-de-doo.
Right.
And say, I am going to totally sell this, mark this up, and sell this on the internet because I need the money because this is what I'm doing right now to make ends meet. I'm putting kids through school. I got to do something. And I will say, more power to you. Fabulous. Take your $10 and send you extra pictures and you may sell them because I don't care. If you sell it, a lot of actors go, no, I do not want anyone selling my photo. I will sign it in special ink and it has to be personalized because I will not have them selling my photo. If I've already gotten my money, I don't care if you sell it once you have it.
Well, no, you make an excellent point.
Consider it a business partnership. If you really are writing to me just to get my eBay 10 to sell it, tell me. Sling me a couple of bucks. We'll make a deal. I'll send you extras. It'll be great.
You know what? It's value for value. That's all. Like, you know, I think it's hilarious.
And store. We opened a store, finally. People going, where's the audiobook and where is the store online? What is wrong with you? And so we finally have the store online. I'm so happy. It's Square. You know Square because I have the thing I stick on my phone to take credit cards when I'm at autograph shows. Well, duh, they let you do an online store. So squareup.com store, and it's Loose Gravel Productions, which is my company, and it says Loose Gravel Productions, not your mother's mercantile, and there's a picture of Nelly. And I've been putting it up all over Facebook. In fact, as I say this, I will slap it up there again.
I'm going to put it in the show notes and everything. I mean, we push it into the faces of everyone that comes near us.
And it's adorable. And we have everything. We have T-shirts. I have candles. You can get Nellie's Warm Cookie and Allison's Hot Orange Tart Scented Candles.
Too funny.
My husband's CD for Catahoula for my husband's band. Nasty Nellie Olson Tour of Hollywood tote bags and stuff. My book, of course, 8x10s. You can get a bunch of stuff. It's cool. We have everything. So click on very reasonable prices. I don't gouge my face.
Thank you.
There you are. So, So, and then you just email me and say, I need it autographed to blah, 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 and we'll fix you up.
Well, I want an autograph. I'm going to send a little tiny envelope.
Oh, okay. Are you German? Because for some reason, I understand that in Germany, postage and envelopes and things are quite pricey. So, or they used to be, I don't know. But in Germany, the German fans will often send a request for autograph and a little tiny, 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 tiny envelope. And they send, sometimes they'll send tiny pictures. They'll send like the little 3x5 cards that they've like printed out that are the photo. But they're all these teeny things. And when we first started getting those, we're like, am I supposed to fold my 8x10?
It's like your passport photo.
Right, my driver's license might fit in here. And it was my husband who said we need to invent something. And I was getting asked for autographs. We'd be at the movies in line or at the beach, and people want an autograph from like them. My husband said you've got to stop signing wet cocktail napkins in people's arms. So he created what he calls the Pocket Nelly, and it's a little like 4x7, little tiny. It's a little card, like a Z card size. Autographable picture of Nellie making that face that you love. And it's that one. And we can put stickers on the back with like how to get on the Nellie newsletter. Email us at newsgravelprod@AOL.
Newsgravelprod@AOL.
Get the newsletter. And you would get and things like that. And then they fit in my purse. They fit in my husband's suit jacket pocket. He can fit them in his inside pocket in his good suit. So when we're out at a formal occasion, he still got them with a Sharpie in his pocket. So I can sign.
Yeah, married the right guy. That's awesome.
He's so smart. And they fit in the teeny little German envelopes. He goes, it works for tiny German envelopes and for fans that you meet in the street when you don't have a big dent. And it's genius. And then we make regular, just regular like Avery, you know, normal size stickers for mailing. But you can put all sorts of information of upcoming gigs and your website and the newsletter and slap it on the back, a little picture. And so when you get one, all the info's on the back with my website and how you can get in touch with me. And I'm on Twitter and I'm on Facebook and I have a store and I have a website and you can get a newsletter.
Well, thank you.
I do everything.
That's awesome. Some people just don't do anything. But again, I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And
thank you, Alison.
This has been a great deal of fun. I have another interview in like 20 minutes. Yeah. I'll be doing this all again. But thank you. Thank you so much. And you did. You let me plug everything. And I'm really proud of Indomitable Spirit. And I'm having people really get into that. And there you go.
And if there's ever something you want us to plug, you know, or anything, you know, just hit us up. We'd, you know, love to hear from
you. Cool. You should totally have. Have you had? You haven't had Charlotte Stewart on yet.
No, we would love to have Charlotte.
You should grab her. She's hysterical. What a life. Just, you know, hello, Jim Morrison. Hi.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
I know.
Yeah, right? And her book. And okay. And she worked with Elvis. So,
I reached out to Lucy Lee Flippin.
Lucy!
But she was a little bit concerned about the connection. So if we could do the phone thing, maybe.
Because she's in a farmhouse in Pennsylvania.
That's what
she barely has electricity.
And I said, wow, I love Pennsylvania. And then she didn't respond to me. She probably thinks I'm some weirdo who's going to like try to track her down. But
yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah,
She is
Laura Ingalls Wilder on the prairie now. She is in a house in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania, so she loses power and stuff. So, yeah.
Nope,
great. Gone. As I would say, 40 years later, still watching it, 140 countries, loved worldwide, just greatest show in television history. Michael Landon totally ruled.
I have 140 some odd episodes on my TiVo.
Good.
It's just always there, you know, in case I want to watch it or I watch the entire season. Same.
I watch it every night. I call it my little house martini. I come home from work, and even though I have the DVDs, I have all the remastered DVDs, I'll still tape it off on INSB every day, and I come home and just plop in that bed, and boom, it's my martini. I don't want to be in denial. I don't want to think about the world.
Thanksgiving, they always have a Little House Marathon on one channel, and then there's like a Twilight Zone Marathon on another channel.
Right.
So my husband will have people over, and we're like making dinner, and I'm running in to baste the turkey. And I've got the Twilight Zone Marathon on. And every time I leave the room to go baste the turkey, I hear the channel change.
Oh, no.
And somebody changes it over to the Little House while I'm out of the room. And then, like, quick, change it back to Twilight Zone. Here she comes.
It's like, I don't want to watch this one. This one's about Carrie. It's like you turn a page to Twilight Zone.
Right? Like, I know what you're watching out there. I can hear you.
But do you get a kick out of it every once in a blue moon to watch
it? I do. It's hilarious.
Good.
Oh, I have to get this person my phone number.
I giggled more than I talked when we did Here Come the Brides. I am just giggling through that entire podcast. That's one of my favorites. Love it.
Yeah, cool. We have a great time
on the
show.
And if you want to do a thing like where you're discussing episodes or something.
Yeah.
Like you said, rehashing an episode of Behind the Scenes. Let's set something up. I can come do that.
That'd be awesome. You'll definitely have
fun. Oh, that would be great.
I'd love to do that. I've done commentary on episodes and live tweeted episodes and stuff, so I'm totally into that.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for offering that. And you'll definitely hear
from
me.
Thank you. Alrighty, thanks.
All right, I'll let you get back to your next thing. I heard you like to put like 10 to 15 things in an order and try to get it all done.
I do. I've interviewed back to back. It's like I try to get as much done in one day. As someone said, you really got the whole carpe diem thing going, don't you? That's kind of.
Well,
Allison, it was so lovely to meet you.
Wonderful to meet you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we love you very much, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck in absolutely everything.
Thank you.
Especially in the Emmys.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm excited.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Time is going to pass.